Live from the heart of the universe, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright
lights. With tonight's guest, we'll fitness ninja, keynote speaker, and entrepreneur, Travis Brewer.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Sarah Connor. I am Mark Leisure, and now our host, the MC, the Master of Change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Today, we're going to be talking about a really important subject: how to play your way to a positive, impactful life. And it's interesting, because yesterday I went to a memorial, and it was a very, very dear, dear person. And at the memorial, because this person, along with being dear, was also a fan of me and my singing and was Italian American, loved when I sang Italian, my friend, his son, asked me if I would impromptu sing an Italian song to honor his father. And I said that I would. And so I broke out into song. And when I was finished, I was asked to sing another. And then I was asked to sing another. And so when I got back in the car leaving the memorial, I was starting to return some calls, and the first one I returned was a friend of mine who asked how was the memorial, and I said what I said, and then I said, I ended up singing, and he said, you sang? I said, yeah, I didn't expect to be asked to sing, and he said, what did you sing? Thinking I was sung a prayer or something, but I said, no, they asked me to sing some Italian songs. And he said, oh, and then he said this, so you had fun. And I thought, which part of I went to a memorial did make him think I had fun? And so I said, I'm glad I was there. I needed to be there. I was there for the deceased and the family. And no, it wasn't fun. I could tell that they were all having a hard time still, and there were some very somber moments. And he said, but you sang. And I said, yes. And I just wasn't making the connection to the fact that there I was happy to gift my voice and my singing to the moment, to the family, to the memory, but I wasn't thinking of it as fun for myself. And I said to my friend, I don't see how that could be fun, but I guess I do enjoy singing, so sure. So all that being said, I woke up this morning thinking, well, maybe fun could have existed at the same time, in the sense that, yes, the reason why I sang and the moment wasn't a fun one necessarily, but the fact that I do enjoy singing and the fact that people enjoyed that moment, there was an element of fun. And so I was in my head about it, but I wanted to figure something out about it, because I'm like, there's something here. Enter Travis Brewer, who I watch our guest today. I watch his TEDx talk, and it happens to be a brand new one that came out, I think, a little less than a month ago. And it's titled, What I Learned About Life 20 Feet in the Air. And I don't want to get into it. Suffice it to say that throughout the watching and listening of his TEDx talk, I was thinking, now there's something there that ties to fun and ties to play that I'm really looking forward to learning more about, because not only is it something obviously that I need, that I could use, but I feel like, especially in this moment, it's something we all need, we all could use. Thank you, Travis Brewer.
In this moment or in all moments?
In all moments. In all moments.
Definitely something we need and something that most people don't know how to choose. And it's counterintuitive.
Mm.
And yet it's probably the beginning of or the whole path to the solutions that everybody's fighting for.
You know, Mark, I, as you're saying this, I'm thinking, how many times have I heard when any of us, when we like try and crack a joke or try and ease a moment and be serious. Can't you be serious? Or this is a serious moment. Like there's so much serious. Nobody says, be funny, be fun. You know, like.
Yeah, we're never encouraged to be successful by being fun or by choosing play or by being quirky. Now you get that after the success, right? If you have success, then you're allowed to be. And then what you're not called serious, you're called eccentric or some other descriptive because you're choosing to play or because you're, you know, Patch Adams, there's a great example of somebody who fought the system with play.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until years later and lots of abuse that he took that people actually recognized that it was helpful.
And has it caught on enough?
Definitely. Not yet.
Obviously not.
Yeah, but maybe it'll catch on a lot more after our show tonight.
After Travis Brewer. So our episode, again, is called How to Play Your Way to a Positive, Impactful Life. It's episode 885. And our featured interview guest is Fitness Ninja, award-winning high-performance athlete, coach, keynote speaker, performer, and so much more, Travis Brewer. Welcome, Travis, to the Life Changes Show.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me. What an honor to be on the show. I'm looking forward to it.
It's so great to have you on. And thank you for inspiring that, not the monologue per se, but the turn, the pivot. Let's use that word. We'll talk about it more in a minute. That the pivot of like what that moment could be or could be going forward kind of thing and how we can do that. So thank you for inspiring that.
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity for us all to look at life and there's an opportunity to find a pivot in our lives. And that's something that I want to be able to kind of share and inspire in a lot of people's lives. It's something that's happened throughout my life from good times and bad times through many different decades. And I think we all can kind of relate to that in the work environment or in a personal environment.
Or both or all of the above.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Before we get deep into play and pivoting and all these other wonderful things we're going to talk about with you, I'm looking at a picture that we posted on our website. By the way, that video that I'm talking about, the TEDx, is on the Life Changes Show video, Life Changes Show page for Travis Brewer. Of course, it's on his website and it's on YouTube, so you could see it. I obviously encourage you to see it. We'll talk more about it. But on the webpage, we also have a picture of you, and it looks like you're flying. So I'm going to ask you, when was it that you first knew you could fly?
Well, rewind to about 15 months old. My mom said I was crawling on the roof of the house, and luckily my parents were pretty supportive and cool. So I didn't fly off the roof, but my mom decided to support this habit with positive reinforcement and put me into Mommy and Me gymnastics. And I just got really lucky that gymnastics coach ended up coaching the U.S. men's gymnastics. So from a young age, I had an opportunity to just kind of learn and move and play through the power of gymnastics and movement, and as well as kind of just connect with my, you know, my mom and the coach. So
I have to think that whether it's within the coaching, I think maybe you came in with some of this knowledge. You said you had great parents and wise ones, and throughout either the coaching or the learning, the mistakes along the way, there have to be, if you're practicing and all of that, that you developed a lot of wisdom. Were you putting pieces together to life in the process, or was it when these major things happened in your life?
Both, I would say. I mean, like I said, I had amazing parents that were really supportive, but doing gymnastics was what I remember doing when I was young, but it was actually ironically going to an NBA basketball game with my dad the 94-95 Houston Rockets championship that kind of changed my life. I remember seeing the Rockets win a championship and my dad getting so excited in the city of Houston and the state of Texas, just being excited. And football and basketball and team sports were way at quote unquote cool. And so I actually quit going into high school to play varsity football and ended up playing basketball as well as doing soccer and was on a state champion soccer team. And the goal was to play pro sports. And I blew my knee out and I tore my ACL, LCL, PCL, couldn't wiggle my toes. The doctor said, "You'll never play sports again." And so I had to go back to the drawing board. And after college, I ended up working in commercial real estate, doing the corporate America job until the market crashed in 2008-9, and it was an opportunity to maybe focus on maybe if I couldn't do the job that I thought would make my parents happy, what would I do that would make me happy? And it was my mom asking me that question, what would make me happy? And that was a led to a level of self-discovery via a book called Autobiography of a Yogi that I learned from after seeing Steve Jobs's keynote talk, ironically, our commencement speech talk about things that changed his life, knowing that he was going to pass away and what he wanted to share with the world before he passed away. And so I was like, wow, that's pretty powerful. And so that book led me to a self-realization fellowship practice, which led to basically knowing myself or know thyself and what is my gift that I want to share with the world. And so through that power of stillness and meditation led to my real joy, which is also movement. And so I think it's finding that balance in between, which is really what I like to preface or preach to a degree now. And that's kind of how I found myself. But it was through a lot of, like, I'd say tumultuous times as well as good times that have led me to using the power of play to get through those hard times. And also when I'm having a good time, some of my greatest memories of life are with play. So that's kind of why I think it's really important to find that balance.
And how interesting that you finally decided you were going to do something and you went for something, and then you had the accident where you were told you'll not only not be able to do it at the level you want to, you may not be able to do it at all. And now you're doing it potentially beyond the level that you ever thought you'd do it.
Yeah. It's wild. It's the what I would want to leave with someone is never give up on your dreams. Like I at 18, I was like, I'll never play sports again. But at 30, I had become a professional ninja warrior after winning a calisthenic competition. And most of my 30s, I was a competitive ninja warrior. And the pandemic shifted that experience and the apparel company selling ninja pants of what I was doing, and that made a big shift. But I got a call. And ended up on doing America's Got Talent with some friends and became a circus performer, which led us to doing performing in Europe, which led us eventually to getting a call to be on the Ellen Show, which eventually led to the NBA calling, and then eventually getting to perform at the Super Bowl. So like a full circle moment of actually getting to do NBA and NFL games and having my dad come sit courtside with me. It was crazy, and it was a prophecy, 30 years late, but it still happened. So.
So I hear you say never give up on your dreams. Now, if the doctor had said that, you would be maybe you wouldn't be this. So I don't know, but if you knew, what could the doctor have said? Not for him, because that's in the past, but maybe for future doctors listening, like what could one say? Like, it's, you might not want to do this now, give it time, or you might be able to figure out, but let's figure something else. What could he say?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the doctor's doing the best that he can in that moment. And I think it's really important for people to always get a second opinion and also realize that a doctor's opinion is not a death sentence. It's just what it is in the moment. You can come back 6 months, a year, 2 years later, and the doctor will be like, "I've never seen an evolution or a change or a recovery like this." And the irony is that the team, my teammates and I on Positive Impact Movement that was on America's Got Talent, we all had career-ending injuries, a knee, a
Wow.
back. All of us had an injury. They're like,
Wow.
"You'll never be able to come back again." And all of us said, "Thank you." And I'm motivated to do the impossible. I'm motivated to come back stronger. And I think that that's important for any human to realize that a doctor might be just the smartest man in the room at or woman in the room at this time, right? And that you are an incredible, powerful healer or person with the determination that can do different, that can do great things. And it might be not be on the timeline that you believe, but it can happen. I've been really inspired by Dr. Joe Dispenza and his book Becoming Supernatural. And he talks about how he had a back injury and he made a full recovery when they said that he would never be able to do that. And there's countless stories of this happening. So remember that the power of nature, the power of a mindset, and the power of movement and stillness is super powerful.
So watching your TEDx talk this morning, I found some interesting things that I didn't expect to find. So, for example, obviously we're watching you do some very, at first, very interesting and very skillful acrobatics, balancing act, and it's great. And then it starts to, I don't want to give it away, but it starts to get a little bit like dangerous. And actually, if anybody knows anything about you, just all they have to do is do a search on you. They see you on balconies and on top of buildings. So we know that you go to the dangerous part. So, or at least dangerous to us. And we'll talk more about that, like what it means to you. But as you're starting to do those, you start to get some like oohs, like the audience is like, oh no, what's going to happen here? While you're talking about some disastrous things that happened in your life. And I thought, wait a minute. He just showed us how he was able to get out of a dangerous or like dramatic situation in life. Like that deserves an ooh and an ah. Do you know what I mean? We're not trained to look at that.
Thank you for seeing another layer to the performance, because at the end of the day, I'm performing not just to do a danger act or to create thrill. It's really to create and tell a story that in those moments of doing these handstands and the handstands on the edge of buildings or the Grand Canyon or even a chair, it's where I need to be fully present and I'm aware of what I'm capable of doing. And then that capability, I'm taking a calculated approach to creating an art and creating an opportunity to be fully present with what I'm doing. And I would argue that finding full presence is one of the greatest purposes or greatest joys of the human experience. And so I'm really just showcasing that while it might feel or look nervous to you, I know what I am doing and it brings me joy and hopefully can reframe what is possible by me showcasing something that I've trained for and that I do for an art.
And so you're obviously knowing that the majority of the people in the audience aren't going to be doing what you're doing. However, what you're doing and what you're saying is what they can incorporate in their life.
Correct. Yeah, the takeaway being that we all have a level of balance or something that will make us uncomfortable. And it's important to be able to learn how to find regulation while doing hard things. Or when something's uncomfortable, how to recalibrate and find balance. Or the using the metaphor of like when life turns you upside down, it's really important to continue to push forward and recalibrate and find balance. And the irony is if you are upside down and you push and find balance, it's also a handstand. So I think handstands are like a beautiful metaphor of like, hey, when life's upside down, learn how to regulate and continue to push forward.
Awesome. So another thing that I noticed, so you're doing these balancing acts, and it your life that you're talking about, and I hope people watch the video and look for this as well, because the life that you're talking about required balance. Obviously, you know what you're doing. It's why you said it, and then you give the some key points that we'll talk about, some key principles of play and of balance. But But along the way, I think, people are doing things like this every day. Not to take away from what you were doing in that moment, but where were the people oohing and aahing and clapping while your life was, burning up and you were able to come out of the fire, right? And we don't always have that applause. You didn't. I'm sure you didn't, right? As a matter of fact, you had people telling you you'll never be able to do to play sports again, right? So how do you applaud yourself, or how do you find that way to have that for yourself if you don't have it around you?
Yeah, I think we all can find ourselves in a moment of like, hey, I'm defeated, or I've been fired, or I don't know what to do, or I'm broken. And I've had all of those scenarios happen. And for example, the last one, I finally got to do an NBA halftime show, which led to doing an international halftime show in Mexico City. We were like one of the top new acts that the NBA wanted to promote. And so we flew down to Mexico City, and during practice, I ended up doing this stunt. I didn't have the right padding. I did it anyways, and I ended up breaking my leg.
Oh.
And I was like, wow, at 40, I've broken a leg. I'm probably never going to come back again. And it was actually a trip to the Grand Canyon by myself on crutches, connecting with nature, and realizing that connection with myself, connection with nature, connection with just my ability to understand myself and know thyself better, was like, well, what do I want to do? And do I want to come back? And the opportunity to connect with a friend who was also a PT, and I was like, all I'm going to do is work on being the best version of myself. And if I can't be back to 100% performing, I can continue to give back to the community and to the people and to the audience that have given and supported me for so long. And so I didn't make it about me, I made it about we. And we as a team created the Positive Impact Movement Festival, where we invited our community and the top teachers from Cirque du Soleil and circus performers from around the world to come and teach, and you get to learn from each other, the top ninja warriors and hand balancers, and we just created an experience. I also found a lot of healing getting into cold rivers and hot springs and into the trees and into the desert. And so my teammate and I, we created a group called Awakened Warrior, and we would awaken the warrior spirit within, which would be journaling and meditating, good food and play. And we would literally build obstacle courses, and we would literally just get people together and surround it around a campfire. And I think that that was super healing. And what I didn't realize is that when I would continue to give back to community and just healing of the people around me, it healed me to a point that I'm back and doing exactly what I love again. I got to perform for the Dallas Mavericks 2 weekends ago, and earlier last month I was at the Super Bowl performing, and something I never thought would be possible, but it's still happening. And I think
Nice.
it's when you take away from just trying to be the best, but like I say in my TEDx talk, it's like it when I reach the top, it's about making a positive impact in the world and how you can make the people and the planet better. And once you do that, I feel like the universe has a plan for you to come back and serve in whichever way you're supposed to be. I was completely happy never performing again, and I was completely happy just doing retreats and doing a wellness center. And what's has honestly led me to my newest obsession, that I'm a partner in a gym called Primal Moves Venice, and we're about 8 months old, and we're doing Wellness 365. We have saunas, cold plunge, mobility classes, dance classes, tea lounge. And I think it's important to have a daily repertoire or daily habits that can lead and last into positive impacts and daily rituals that will turn you back to being the best version of yourself, or turning you back to primal. And so that's what I'm really dedicated about doing now. And I think that anyone has an opportunity to make a daily change in their lives at any age.
So had you not had that quote unquote downtime from what happened in Mexico, you might not have created all these other things.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to realize that the down times can be creative times. And actually, Steve Jobs talks about when he got fired from his own company, and that creative time helped him create, what became Pixar, right? And he would never have done that if he actually hadn't been let go of Apple at the time. And so remember that something creative can happen from your quote unquote worst nightmare, right? It's possible at any age.
So I don't know how, if you spent any time feeling sorry for yourself, did you?
Of course. Yeah, I've felt sorry for myself, but also feeling sorry for yourself is like a rocking chair. It's going to get you nowhere fast.
Well, so that's what I was going to say. So if your mission is to do things for people, whether you're performing or whether you're building stuff for them, or then you became okay with the moment because you could still fulfill your mission, right?
Absolutely. I think it's important to have a mantra or a mission, just like a business has a mission statement. I think a human should have a mission statement, what they're trying to create for this world. And it's when I created a mission statement for myself, back around my Saturn return at the end of the 28, 29, 30, I was like wanting to just, who am I and what is my mission in life? And it was to make a positive impact through movement. And that's evolved from an apparel company to a performance company to a festival to now a keynote. And I'm really excited to just continue to share in any way possible and reach as many people as possible.
And a gym.
Yeah, and a gym, absolutely, and a primal gym.
So let's speak a little bit more about your keynote, because it's very key in the sense you take something primal like play and you hold it up, like you give it the importance. So actually you had a quote from Picasso in there somewhere. Do you remember exactly how it goes?
It took me something like 20 years to paint Michelangelo, but it took me a lifetime to paint like a child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how does that apply to our lives and how we've forgotten how to play?
Yeah, I think there's a quote at the end of my talk that's really just as impactful. It's, we don't stop playing because we
Yeah.
grow old. We grow old because we stop playing. And I think that that's super relevant to any human because for some reason, when we get old, we think that we can't play anymore. And I think keeping that childlike playfulness is so important. And just because you might have a child that hopefully allows you some sort of a hall pass to be a little bit more childlike, but don't allow it just to be for your child. Allow it always to be for yourself. I think it's so important to keep that mindset of finding what brings you joy. And I think the underlying secret sauce to being playful is also like, what did you do when you had no agenda, when you had no calendar, when you just wanted to go out and play as a kid? And that's where you kind of might have found your spirit or yourself of like, this is what I love to do. And also a level further, this is where you're adaptable, you're pivoting, you're always shifting your ideas, you're being creative, you're maybe doing one thing and then another, and you're in your body and your mind. And that connection is so important. And that's why I think play is super important. Beyond just like playing the game, it's getting to know yourself. And that's like, some people talk about the runner's high when they run or finding that flow state, but being able to get back into yourself and find that flow state to be productive and just be creative is one of the more important things that we have in this human experience.
So, one of the first thing you say is, in play, we are present. And
Yes.
that really, like, whoa, like, yeah, it's hard to get a kid's attention when they're playing.
So true.
And we would get annoyed when our parents would try and get our attention. Like, what? We have to go now? Really? We're playing. Like, we already are doing the important thing. Why are you taking us away from here? I can't see us all applying that in our life. How do you rationalize that yet in your mind?
Well, actually, one of the things I'm most proud of at Primal is not only teaching the higher level classes and teaching the teachers, but I also teach a kids class.
Ah.
And in the kids class, we encourage and almost make the parents work out with the kids. We make the parent find play with their child so that the child sees that their parent is also loves to play. And the parents help the kid learn a handstand, maybe hang from a bar. The kid will then run an obstacle course, but we do the animal movements together and we play a lot of the games together. And I think that that's really important for the adult to continue to have that essence and that energy. And so that's one of the things I'm more proud of that we do at this gym, among allowing kids a kid-friendly experience, that kids are allowed at all the adult classes to, while the adult might be working out, allowing the kid to be who they are in that experience. And so just allowing that creative freedom and that playful spirit at any age.
It's also community building.
Absolutely.
So Primal Moves, primalmoves.com, just like it sounds. And there's one in Venice, California. And that's where you are most of the time, right? When you're not traveling and performing, right?
Correct. I'm a partner in the Venice location, the first one in America, but it actually was started by a amazing gentleman named Nick Brewer, who is from who lives in Ibiza, and he started the practice and has been expanding it. There is a location in Barcelona and in Portugal as well.
Any relation?
Not officially that we know of, but I say cosmic cousins because I mean
Wow.
it's too good to be true. Not, yeah. Yeah.
That's
But we did not
crazy.
grow up together by any means. So,
That's crazy good. Well, the
yeah.
third thing you mentioned presence. We talked a little about presence and purpose. And then gosh, I don't want to go through all of them, but you pick another of the P's that let's talk pivot. It's actually not in the TED talk, but I understand you're going to be talking about it. So let's talk pivot.
Yeah, actually, I the kind of the I'd say the next evolution or combining all of the powers of the piece from the keynote or from the TEDx talk is the power of the pivot. I think there's always an opportunity for any human to make a pivot in their life. I know that I've had to do it many times throughout my life, and I think through any work environment, through any family experience, there is going to be a time that we'll need to pivot, even just in the workplace, even if work is going good, but a new marketing campaign, or if actually there are going to be a recession and you're going to have to pivot, there's always going to be something, right? And so hopefully it's not something that's super detrimental and life changing or threatening, but there's always going to be an opportunity to pivot, and that can be good or bad. And I think it's important for us to remember that you're not alone. There's many other people, including myself and many other around the world who's had to pivot through hard times. And all even when things are good, you might have to make a change. And so to give someone the encouragement, give someone the confidence or even the comfort that you're not alone, and to find that power within you, and to not only look within you, and maybe it's using the power of play to return to who you are, to know thyself better, to make the judgment call of how to change when change is needed.
So pivot works really well with the play analogy because pretty much that's what you do in play, especially when you're being imaginative or creative and having fun in that way. You're pivoting all the time. And you say, I thought it was very clever when we spoke earlier, and you said, do you remember what you said about pivot and play?
Can you remind me?
That you don't notice it because you're having fun.
Yes, that's true.
That's crazy good.
Yeah.
So if we're noticing it, might be a clue we're not having fun. So when you're a kid, and don't have a lot of responsibilities, potentially, at least in their mind, maybe they do, but that a pivot or something happening in life could be very major for an adult, like all the ones you mentioned. But on some level, when you take it to the story as you're sharing it, you almost make it sound like that could be one of those stories that kids would say, "Whoa, that was so cool. Wow, that happened to you. Well, look what happened to me." And it could be actually like fun or funny, which I still find it hard to go there right away. But after a while, you sound like you're getting close to that.
Yeah, I saw a sticker or a quote once that says, if you're not having fun, it doesn't count. And it was like for a conference of these artists and entrepreneurs this amazing conference called Summit Series, where they bring top artists, activists, billionaires, creatives, and who have found different levels of success. But they're like, cool, you might have made X amount of dollars, but if you didn't have fun, does it really count? And so it's kind of a cool thought medium to think about, right? It's like having fun is also its own currency in itself.
So, as we're bringing our conversation sadly to a close, because it's so good and fun, and when you are on a balcony or the top of a building or the top of a mountain, and you're doing a handstand and all of that. Interestingly enough, when one talks about finding flow, we always think like athletes who are doing something, like they got in their flow and they ran faster or smoother or swam or whatever. But you have to be in your flow when you're seemingly just standing there upside down, right?
Yeah, I'm finding flow and stillness.
Now, I don't know of anybody that's talked about it like that before, so please share a little bit about that.
Yeah, within the handstand, you really want to be as still as possible, but there's always a little bit of micro movement that's coming, but it's really returning back to balance and being as still as possible. It's finding that control. So I want to be minimizing large movements, and I wanted to share that even in stillness, the inside of us is always moving. And so there it's being able to harness that energy and that power within you, no matter how much you're moving or not. And it's something I just wanted to a little thought to think about.
Yes. Well, the connection to what you're surrounding, or to a higher power, or to a belief system, or all of the above.
Yeah. Actually, definitely. For me, especially when doing more dangerous things, there's a level of prayer, a level of presence that comes in, and that anything is possible. You know, even when Alex Honnold free solos a climb, there's always a chance that something unfortunate can happen. There's also a level of presence and success that can happen as well. But it's one climb, one step at a time, and for me, it's one press at a time, and finding that pure presence and what's possible. I think the beauty of a handstand or a free solo or a climb is that it brings you into full self-control.
Full self-control. Wow. So I look forward to getting to experience what you're talking about at Primal Moves, in the sense that, and getting to see you perform live, because it looks like, it feels like, you are part of the flow is the fun, and you're obviously an expert at what you do, so it doesn't look like work. And it feels like the audience gets to like kind of fly with you.
Thanks for that reflection. I never really thought of it that way, but I'm glad that that's the way that you feel, and hopefully others do as well.
Yeah, like you're doing something we wish we could, but we can't, but we can do it watching you, and to whatever extent. So thank you for bringing that. Thank you for your TEDx talk. I told you I'm ready. I look forward to the book and the movie and the next one. So but in the meantime, you're doing a lot of other things, and
Thank
I'm
you.
impressed, and it's exciting.
Thank
So
you so much.
give us a there's a couple websites that we have up on the web page, but obviously primalmoves.com. And then we've got travisbrewer.ninja. I think that was I've never seen a dot ninja, by the way.
That came out, I don't know, maybe about 10 years ago when they were adding all the different, dot co and dot edu and dot life. They had a dot ninja, and I'm like, well, this is cool. I might as well get that as a backup, and decided to just run with it. So,
Too perfect. Travis Brewer. Dot ninja, easy to remember. Go check it out. Find him on Instagram at Brewer 314, and again, primalmoves.com. Travis, great having you on the show. Thank you for sharing. Look forward to more.
All right, thank you.
All the best. Wow.
So you're telling me you're not going to climb some chairs and balance anytime soon?
I'm not. actually. But I might do something, like you said, uncomfortable.
I bet you could do it. You just wouldn't be able to do it for very long, like he does.
And not a very high chair.
Well, or maybe a high chair.
No, but there's plenty of stuff like that's his point, I think, one of his many is that like what is the chair in our life kind of thing? What is the uncomfortable thing in our lives?
I love the metaphors that he uses, and his background is amazing yet relatable for so many different people's journeys. But you know, that open chair for Source in the studio showed up again because what are the odds that I was just talking to a dear friend who built their swimming career over many years against all odds and ended up injured and didn't make the qualifying rounds for the Olympics. And yet there was a connection to the Grand Canyon and healing and learning to play and all sorts of other things. So quite extraordinary the way the universe works.
Indeed. And you know, it's interesting, like I was asking, like what could that doctor have said, or how would you know, what would you say? And sometimes people act like we don't know. Some people come into our lives, sometimes we need someone to tell us we can't do something. And I don't know, you know, it just depends on how somebody might believe it. I'm like, okay, I can't do it. But I love what he said about that.
And that's part of what we were talking about. Teachers or mentors or parents' projections, fears, right? Are you end up
Yes.
doing or not doing things largely because of the influences around you. And many people never have the opportunity to exploit their own gifts or truly align with their own path because someone else, you know, who may have been afraid to do it, said don't.
You know, actually, before we bring on our performance guest, Primal Moves actually is connected because Samuel J will be at Primal Moves, who introduced us to Sarah Connor, who will be our performance guest in just a little bit. And
Yeah,
so
and we just finished, in fact, I got to meet Travis at Primal Moves for the Joy Fest LA event. So there's a lot
So it's
going
a
on
real
there.
community center.
It's a fantastic space for fitness, for community, and for life-changing events, it seems.
Okay. Well, and with that, we'll have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Debbie, and I have done it again. Why do I continue to fall in love with men who are abusive and disrespectful to me? My last five relationships have been with men who cheat on me and lie to me. Please help me understand why I'm only attracted to this kind of man, and how do I change and make better choices?
Dearest Debbie, I too experienced this pattern in the past and finally came to understand that even if something is painful, the mind often gravitates toward what feels familiar. If someone grew up around dishonesty, emotional inconsistency, or betrayal, those dynamics can feel strangely normal. And since you have shared with me in the past that this was your family dynamic, I trust that you will have a better understanding of why you continue to choose this type of man. I grew up believing that love was what my mother and father were experiencing, and it wasn't until way too many years later that I found out that there was no love in their relationship. In fact, there was no relationship. It was years of reactionship. It was not until I was ready to divorce my husband that my dad begged me to stay married for the sake of the children. And after my conversation with him, I delayed my divorce for a few weeks. But when it became very clear that my husband would continue to cheat on me and lie to me and disrespect me, I then took the first step, which led me to loving myself. I divorced him. The good news for you, Debbie, is that you don't have children to keep you trapped in an unhealthy relationship. So let's understand that your childhood possibly influenced your nervous system just as mine did, to interpret calm, emotionally available people as boring, while chaotic or unreliable partners feel exciting or magnetic. And most importantly, please understand that our subconscious self-worth plays a role in our choices. It appears to me that self-love is what seems to be missing in your life, just as it was absent in mine. You may unconsciously believe, I have to earn love. People eventually leave or betray me. I'm not enough. When those beliefs are running beneath the surface, you may unknowingly tolerate behavior that confirms the beliefs. And you might possibly interpret calm, emotionally available people as boring, while chaotic or unreliable partners feel exciting or magnetic. And let's understand that our subconscious self-worth plays a role in our choices, and that because you are a healer, you may be drawn to partners who seem wounded or complicated because helping them feels meaningful. Unfortunately, people who need rescuing are often not ready to be trustworthy partners. In the future, you might want to ask yourself, am I choosing someone who is ready for a healthy relationship right now? And precious friend, I see your most important first step is to love and approve of yourself. I'll be happy to have a conversation with you and help guide you to loving Debbie. Loving ourselves is the most important challenge we face as humans. I was finally able to love and forgive myself, and I am truly happy and at peace with my life. Once you love Debbie, I know your life will change dramatically for the better.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And for our performance segment, we have a visionary artist. She is Sarah Connor. Welcome, Sarah, to the Life Changes Show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
It's so great to have you on. And again, thanks to Samuel J and the fact that you're going to be performing at Primal Moves.
Yes, on the 29th. Yeah, it's going to be a really beautiful experience.
So people can go to primalmoves.com. I saw a calendar there, and I think it's listed there to learn not only about this coming event, but all the other events and classes and workshops they have. So you too were one of these people who, right out of the gate, so to speak, you were signaling towards here. What was that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, right out of the gate, I guess you could say I was, my parents will tell you that I sang instead of cry when I would wake up in the morning. So that was kind of the first clue.
Oh.
And yeah, super sweet. And I'm sure I was a total, you know, POS some other times, but but initially it was very sweet. And so they very beautifully put me in front of a lot of beautiful mentors and teachers, and allowed me to train. And I was trained as a classical vocalist and a pianist as well, and trained in opera for 4 years, and jazz and a bunch of different styles. But I never really found something that felt really true to my soul, and something that felt like, you know, I really wanted to step fully into it and share my voice through it, until about probably 5 years ago, when I picked up freestyling. And and suddenly in this kind of flow state, I love that you were talking about, you know, stillness and flow earlier, as you relate so much to that. That it really just enlivened me, and I was able to kind of catch my own style and find my way through. So, yeah.
Well, you know, I've been singing a song all day because I heard that this morning too, and that has stuck with me. Guess what song that was?
Was it Mama Gaia?
Yeah.
Nice. Yes, that's one of my most popular songs.
So we're gonna hear that in just a moment, but it has stayed with me. So both of you and Travis. And I'm sure our audience too is really gonna feel this, like tonight and tomorrow, because you're presenting in a way that's very real, and I think in a way that's very today. And so what you do is also very in the moment, which tell us about that, because it's impromptu, a lot of it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I call myself a freestyle vocalist, which basically just means that I specialize in making things up on the spot. And, you know, it's Essentially, dropping into a flow state on a musical level for me involves, maybe 80% surrender and 20% analytical mind. I think about, what Travis was talking about with movement and stillness. And there's that kind of same sort of relationship in music when you're dropping into a flow state. And there's a huge level of courage and trust that you have to be able to anchor in your being in order to engage in a moment where you're just like, okay, I have a microphone and I'm going to make something up and I'm going to trust that it's going to be great. And if
It's
it's
go
not, I'm
time.
not going to freak out,
I just said it's go time, but it's really flow time, right?
Yes, it
Well,
is.
let's go and let's hear that song because then everybody will know what we're talking about. And so, yes, one of your most popular song called "Mama Gaia," and this was it written with Luke Rayne, or you both worked together in a different way?
So essentially, Luke Rayne is a great friend of mine. He lives in Seattle, Washington, where I used to live. And he came to one of my sets and he was there in the audience. And I did a freestyle in which this song that you'll hear came through. And I use a Boss RC-505 to create all these multi-layered loops. And so after my set, he came up to me and he was like, oh my gosh, we have to record that one together. I'd love to get you in the studio and make this into a song. And so I was like, yeah, for sure. And so that was one of our first songs that we collaborated on. And then we created another song, which you'll hear later, in the
Okay.
same kind of way.
Well, here is Sarah Connor. This is her pre-recorded song, Mama Gaia, here on the Life Changes Show.
Hey, Mama Gaia, I'm bringing you roots. I'm bringing you sacred fire. Ooh. the flames, I bring it all together with my hands and my love. Forever and ever, the roots, the trees, the sun, the flames, I bring it all together with my hands and my love. Forever and ever.
Sarah Connor, thank you. I want to hear you do that live.
We're going to hear it live. I want to give another shout out to Samuel J and the Bloom Experience and Colin Martin and so many other great artists that will be joining Sarah as well at Primal Moves for the Music Showcase and Dance Party. It's Sunday from 5 p.m. to 9:30 at Primal Moves Venice.
And Sarah, you do so much. Obviously, you have gone through so many different experiences with your voice. You've studied your voice in so many different aspects, and music, of course. And now you're helping people with their voice. Tell us about the Visible Voice.
Yes, absolutely. So the Visible Voice is a 10-week immersion that I developed to help people step into the kind of confidence that allows them to free flow, channel from their heart, from their soul, songs, spoken word, or just speak the truth. I think so many people, like you were saying before, it's like we all grew up with life experiences and childhood and these things that, you know, maybe different voices from different elders or mentors or teachers or parents that tend to teach us to hold ourselves down, to repress ourselves, to not share who we truly are. And so a lot of times we go through life feeling like we want to share more, or there's something deeper inside that we want to bring to the world that we can't quite speak it out when we want to speak it out, or we can't quite sing the song, you know, we can't quite bring it through. So what I've done is I've created a transformational container for people to step into, to be able to engage in the kind of somatic exercises, vocal technique training, and nervous system work to be able to actually shine their light in the world and sing their song and speak their truth in the way that they've always wanted to.
Or even maybe in a way that they didn't know they could.
Absolutely.
Or yes. Didn't even know they wanted to. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah. And right? Because I'm saying that because I know so many transformations can happen. So tell us a couple of the ahas or the surprises or what happens when people start finding their voice or using it in the way that you help them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, what I love about the voice is that it's really, it's the living embodiment of all of your belief systems, the health of your physical form. There's so many different things going on that kind of dictate how your voice comes through your body. And so oftentimes when I'm working with people, you know, they come kind of expecting like, okay, we're going to do, you know, the standard vocal lesson, like da 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 da. And then they, you know, they're in tears talking about their childhood. And I'm like, yeah, like this is, you know, this is the work that we do, because on the other side of it, what happens is that people are able to have more clarity in their relationships, like deeper connections. They're able to, you know, sing songs and bring through. I have people that are, you know, in a longer form container with me. I do a year long mentorship, and I had a client who she came in and she was like, oh yeah, I really want to freestyle, but I don't even think that I can access my voice. Like I can't even barely sing by myself. And a few months in, she was like, freestyling, making songs all the time, just it brought her so much joy and she felt so much freedom. And so she's actually able to like be out in community more and like welcome her friends into her home where she wasn't really doing that before, you know. And wow. it's this kind of overall transformation that allows you to be more expressive in every area of your life. And I think you can't really underestimate how powerful and important that is for a human being in this world.
Wow. So sarahconnormusic.com, that's Sarah with an H, Connor with an E, Sarah, mm-hmm. sarahconnormusic.com. And then you will find the visible voice there, right? The link at the Sarah Connor Music website.
That's correct.
We also have the links at the Life Changes Show page. Of course, you can find her on Instagram at I Am Sarah Connor. And she's on YouTube. We have links for that as well at the Life Changes Show page. Sarah, exciting. I know I can speak firsthand as to how important the voice is. Let's talk about this for a moment, how your work sounds so important because people say the eyes are the mirror to our soul, but the voice speaks it, sings it. It's hard for the voice to lie what's inside, right?
Absolutely. It is. And I think that's part of the potency of the voice and of working with your voice, because it's a literal live feedback mechanism to teach you how you are in any given moment and how you're relating to your environment. In the same way that, you know, I could look at your body position and see if you were feeling joyful or depressed, you know, they're different,
right?
They're different positions. And it's right. The same with your voice. Like, I think that's part of the reason why so many people enjoy the kind of entheogenic experience where they're like, oh my God, you know, I dropped into a psychedelic journey and then I had this incredible access to my voice. But now when I'm not in that, I don't have that access. And so, you know, what we want to do is really unveil the truth of who you are so that you can express as that truth, whether or not you're in an entheogenic experience, because that's just why we're here. You know, we're here to be expressive creator beings. This is my belief, my opinion, but I just in doing this work with people and seeing so many people shine, and in my own life experience, it's like, we're here to create, you know, we're here to serve humanity and to serve this earth in such a powerful way. And so many of the problems in our world really stem from us not having a loving and powerful relationship with ourselves and with each other. And when we can kind of drop into creating that loving internal environment inside of ourselves, it allows so much safety and space for our voices to come through, and so much more like mental space and emotional space also to be able to hold another person who's having a hard time, you know, not taking things personally, like not taking it on, just having so much compassion. So it's really a profound thing. The voice seems to just be a potent access point to unveiling a whole host of things about oneself and one's potential in the world and how we relate to each other and how we relate to the planet.
You sound like you're on it. And a little bit like Travis's quote of Picasso, how it took a long time to learn how to paint, but longer to learn how to paint, you know, like a child. I'm not quoting it exactly, and I won't quote this exactly either, but I have had a voice coach who used to say, when a baby is born, like, you could hear them down the block when they're crying, right? They could certainly hear you singing down the block when you were a baby, I'm sure. But you could hear a baby crying down the block. But then he says they come to me for voice lessons and their voice is so small. And after all these years of saying, you know, be quiet, or being told to be quiet, and children should be heard and not seen, or seen and not heard, and all of these are limiting beliefs on top of it, by the time they come to you, that's all shut down, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think the important thing that I found within that experience is that it's not so much that you have to learn a bunch of new skills in order to unveil the beauty and harmony in your own voice. It's you just really need to relax. And there's so many different ways that we can learn how to do that in the context of sharing your voice speaking or sharing your voice singing. But that's where the work is. Because it, you know, when it seems obvious, but oftentimes we don't think about it. If our body is in a heap ton of tension and our mind is super stressed and we're just in this kind of ping pong between our limiting beliefs and our negative beliefs about ourselves and the tension in our body, there's not a lot that our voice can do, because your throat's going to tense up. All those airways are going to get smaller. You're going to take tiny breaths, and then suddenly you're squeaking out a sound and you're like, why don't I sound beautiful? And then somebody will tell you, oh, you don't have a beautiful voice. Like singing's really not for you. You shouldn't be doing that. And then you believe it because you're hearing your own voice and you're like, yeah, they're probably right. I'm just never going to do this again. And like so many people that come to me are that way, but they've had the courage to be like, no, I actually think there's something else under here. And like, maybe I'm not going to, you know, blow up and become Mariah Carey, but I would love to just feel what it feels like to feel my expansive heart and my voice and feel comfortable speaking in a room.
Listen to you go. You go, Sarah. you know, Travis might say we need to get more primal. I wonder if you're saying we need a call of the wild.
Yes. I think we do.
I think we tell us why I said that. It's true, but tell us also why I said that.
It is true. So Call of the Wild is another one of my songs, which you will hear in just a couple minutes. And this was a collaboration again between my dear producer friend Luke Rain and I. And once we kind of figured out the flow of how we work together, you know, we kind of made the backdrop, we made the beat together. And then, you know, he essentially just says, okay, like just get in your state and just go. And he'll just press record and I'll just go and freestyle over what we created. And then he kind of will come in and pick the parts that he likes and we'll kind of do that together and piece them together in the right order. So what you're about to hear is the compilation of us creating a kind of a beautiful backdrop together and then me just freestyling a bunch of things over the top of that and masterpiecing it all into a song.
Wait, is this out yet?
It is. These are both on Spotify.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So on Spotify and probably where else music is
sold. Oh, everywhere. Yeah, Amazon and Apple Music and all the things.
So here's Sarah Connor's Call of the Wild, pre-recorded here on the Life Changes Show.
I feel the howl of of the wind as it dances with me in the flames. Every time I go into battle, I know that I will win. It's my certainty that brings me into balance again. Cause the motion of the ocean, it fills my always bringing me yeah the call of the wilds always bringing me home call of the wilds always bringing me home call of the wilds always bringing me home yeah the call of the wilds always bringing me home call of the wilds always bringing me home call of the wilds always bringing me
Sarah Connor, thank you so much. Sarah with an H, Connor with an E, sarahconnormusic.com, and then find her workshop, The Visible Voice, there, a link on sarahconnormusic.com, and also find her music on Spotify and where music is available and sold and enjoyed. Sarah, such a pleasure having you on the show.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you.
I'm so glad this worked out. We appreciate you. So with a big thank you to Sarah Connor and another big thank you to Travis Brewer, that is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark LeJour, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, and along with our whole family here at the Life Changes Show, we remind you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at the Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.